Imran Khan's win in the Pakistani elections is seen as a significant upset for the country's traditional ruling parties. Much can be said about internal issues that may have played into Khan's win, the army's role, and rigging allegations. More importantly, Khan's foreign policies are now in the spotlight from his critical view of the United States and desire for better relations with India, Afghanistan, Iran, as well as his focus on China as being the answer to solving the country's economic issues. Join me, Waqar Rizvi, to discuss Imran Khan's foreign policy outlook. Let's firstly go to the Pakistani capital, Islamabad, where we're joined now by Press TV's correspondent, Kamran Yusuf. Kamran, what is the latest coming out of these election results?
Well, according to the Election Commission of Pakistan, Imran Khan's Tehreek-e-Insaf is clearly taking the lead, and according to the official results, his party has currently won around 117 seats. So he needs just 20 more seats to form the government in the center. And that is not a difficulty, since considering the fact that there are a number of independent candidates who are likely to join his party once the official results are announced. But on the other hand, there was another significant development today, happened in the capital, Islamabad, that except Tehreek-e-Insaf, all the main political parties, they sat down and discussed the rigging allegations. And now they have decided to demand fresh elections, because they believe that elections were massively rigged, and they have also decided that they will not take oath as far as their new members are concerned. However, there are certain differences. For example, the former ruling party, Pakistan Muslim League Nawaz, is not sure at the moment that whether they would support the demand of other political parties. They said they need more time to consult with other political parties to decide the future course of action. Election Commission of Pakistan, on the other hand, has rejected allegations of rigging and said that whatever happened or the delay in election results was due to a technical hitch. So all these developments are currently happening, while Imran Khan is also busy consulting his aides to form the government in the center.
Very well, Kamran. As always, we appreciate your reporting for us. Let's introduce now our guest for tonight's discussion. We're joined by TV journalist Sayed Mohsin Abbas, who is joining us live from London. And we're also joined by the managing director of the Pakistan Institute for Conflict and Security Studies, Abdullah Khan, who is joining us live from Islamabad. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us. Abdullah Khan, I'd like to start with you, if I may. What do you make of Imran Khan's win, albeit, of course, short of a majority?
Thank you. Actually, it was a surprise, because all the surveys released prior to this election suggested that Imran Khan's party would be getting around about 90-85 seats, but he is close to simple majority, and perhaps after including independents, he may not be requiring the support from People's Party or other smaller parties. So it was a surprise for everybody, the way the people, especially in the Khyber Pakhtunkhwa and Punjab, responded to Imran Khan's call. That was not expected by the political pundits here in Islamabad. So it was a surprise for most of us here in Islamabad. And we think that Imran's political struggle is paying off to him, because he spent 22 years struggling to come into power, and now I think he is there.
Sayed Mohsin, what do you make of that? What do you make of Khan's win?
Well, he's become the 19th prime minister that Pakistan has, but his problems are going to be no less weighty, and the chances of him succeeding are not necessarily any better than his predecessors. The same old problems exist, which Imran Khan is going to have to tackle: the security issues, the economic issues, the poverty, etc., and of course the political elites, the biggest problem. And he, to his credit, I mean, he's effectively run his campaign on the corruption, the anti-corruption ticket, which is actually fundamentally the biggest issue for Pakistan, always has been. And it's fascinating how the establishment itself, because Imran Khan is not devoid of members of the establishment, the Pakistan military, the civil sector, a lot of the people who are established, if you like, known entities are with him. So it's very interesting to see the Pakistani political and other structural elite kind of on the surface seeming at each other's throats. But it remains to be seen as to whether he really can make inroads. He's saying he wants Pakistan to focus on becoming a solid welfare state, and he's fighting for the poor man against the rich. Yet most of his party actually is going to be made up by the very same elites he's talking about.
Okay, so Abdullah Khan, we wanted to, in this debate, focus more on Imran Khan's foreign policies, or at least what he's spoken about foreign policies so far in his quote-unquote victory speech and even before that. So one of the major topics, obviously, Abdullah, is that of relations with the United States. Khan has called for, quote-unquote, mutually beneficial and more balanced relationship with the U.S. instead of what he has called the current one-way ties between these two countries. What do you make of that?
If you recall the history of Imran Khan, he was always against the American military intervention in Afghanistan, and also he always opposed the Pakistani military operations inside Pakistani territory. He was always critical against Americans' policies in the region. So I think his approach will be, as per his own understanding of the issue, it would be perhaps a better policy than the previous regimes if he will be allowed to pursue his independent foreign policy, and I think he will. And the current situation is very much in line with his policy, because recently the Americans themselves have said that they want direct talks with Taliban, and some developments are going on behind the scene that the Americans are reaching out to Taliban. There are some meetings have taken place somewhere in the Middle East as well. So I think the situation, ongoing situation in Afghanistan and around the Afghanistan conflict, very much suits Imran Khan's vision of the Afghan issue. So he may not face much difficulties to pursue his vision of the Afghan policy towards Afghanistan and towards the American. Another thing is that Imran Khan is a man who can stand up to the Americans' pressure. He is not like his predecessor, the Nawaz Sharif, who used to become under pressure by the Americans most of the time. Imran Khan is somebody who is considered to be a person who can stand up and speak for the people of Pakistan to safeguard their interests. This is his perception right now here in our minds. But only time will tell that whether he stands up to our expectations or not.
Indeed, Sayyid Mohsin, that's an interesting point, isn't it? Can Khan really stand up to the Americans? Because, you know, we have to see this in the context of the fact that, as you mentioned, Sayyid Mohsin, the army plays a huge role in Pakistani society, obviously has huge influence. It will obviously be pressuring Khan to do what it wants. And secondly, we're seeing this in the context of that suspended security assistance from the Trump administration as well.
I think you're absolutely right, Waqar. This is probably the most complicated area of Pakistani, if you like, statesmanship that he'll have to master. Basically, what's gone on since General Zia's time, and when the Americans needed to go in and try and oust the Russians from Afghanistan, Pakistan and the military of Pakistan have acquiesced and have voluntarily become a tool for the Americans in many ways to achieve American policies. But actually, Pakistan's military has also played very clever. They've obviously kept very close control of the Taliban in Afghanistan. Whether they admit it or not is a different matter. But this has been a very clever policy by the Pakistani military. Effectively, the U.S. Would prefer India to become its proxy power in Afghanistan, and to that the Indians have a huge presence, a huge consulatory presence. They are all over the Afghan government at the moment. They're injecting billions of, if you like, rupees of, or even more of aid. Why? India being on the border of Pakistan on two sides is clearly a situation the Pakistan military were never going to accept. And for America to play this double game has been, I think, the primary problem. The Pakistan military itself gets military aid from the US. They pump in hundreds of millions of pounds of aid to the Pakistan military. At the same time, they seem to be playing with India to take dominance of Afghanistan. I think that's what's delayed what's going on. And in fact, it may be deliberate, because the US Also, undoubtedly, there are illegal shipments of everything from heroin and other smuggled goods, which one doesn't see on the surface. But there's a lot of contraband that is being smuggled out of Afghanistan. There is big money involved, effectively, there. So, for Imran, the classic tactic is really how to negotiate a balance with the US so that they don't have a backlash, because they also have operatives, PSYOPs operatives, in terms of ISIS, the ISIS operators within that region. They are also proxies for the US who are ready to cause mayhem, and they have been causing mayhem during this very election. They're there to cause trouble for Imran Khan or the Pakistan military if they don't comply with US military demands and interests geopolitically in that area.
Interesting. Abdullah Khan, I wonder what you make of Sayed Mohsin's reading of India specifically, because, you know, Imran Khan did mention India in his speech as well, where he said that his government would be prepared to take two steps forward to improve ties with India. But then he did, of course, also mention the long-standing issue of Kashmir as well. How do you think he'll be able to handle this issue of India?
Actually, first of all, I would like to second the opinion of Mohsin that the biggest problem for Pakistan and Afghanistan is growing influence of India at the behest of the Americans. Perhaps if you see the geopolitical situation, the India is getting isolated in the region, while Pakistan is getting support from China and Russia. Pakistan is getting closer to Iran as well. Recently, a lot of goodwill gestures have been made to Iran, and even Imran Khan in his speech has mentioned Iran very positively. So Iran, Pakistan, Russia, China, all these are joining hands against the emerging threat of ISIS, which is supposed to be supported by the Americans. If we talk about the issue of Kashmir, that is no doubt the major issue, the bone of contention between India and Pakistan. Unless that is resolved, the relations between India and Pakistan cannot improve. And perhaps this is the will of the Imran Khan, and he expressed it. And this is the will of every Pakistani, that we want to settle this issue politically and peacefully. But the issue is the Indian policies. India wants to squeeze Pakistan in Balochistan, in Kashmir, and now on the western side in Afghanistan as well, to make Pakistan sandwich. So that will not pay off, actually. But I would like to suggest to Indians that Pakistan, Iran, Afghanistan, they are your neighbors, but not the Americans. You are isolating yourself in the region. Perhaps Indians should become bigger brother in the region. They should take care of the issues which are related to this region, and they should not play the role of spoilers, just like they are playing in Afghanistan. They are not letting the issue to be settled down in Afghanistan.
Okay, so Sayed Mohsin, what do you make of the role of India, and specifically again about the issue of Kashmir? Because, you know, again, many people may be wondering, looking at Imran Khan, can he be the one who finally brings some possible hope of peace in that region?
Well, in fact, Kashmir has become more aflame over the last 4 or 5 years. And the truth is that the Indians have become more belligerent. 500,000+ Indian troops are in there. And there is a genuine uprising. There is a genuine, if you like, dislike of what the Indians are doing. The right of self-determination is something the UN still has in place as a right for the Kashmiris. So the Indians should have a sense of shame themselves, that they're acting rather like the belligerent Zionist Israeli entity, where they are just denying the rights of the people. But I would say that Kashmir is going to be definitely continue to be the issue that always gets raised by India as being the main, if you like, point and bone of contention. But I rather suspect something slightly different now, because what's happening in Balochistan, and my dear colleague did reference this point, but I'd like to expand it. Balochistan has in excess of, some say, $25 trillion of assets and wealth under its ground, whether it's copper mines, whether it's black diamonds, whether it's gas, whether it's the access to the Gwadar port, the only deep sea port in that region. Whichever way you look at it, or whether Balochistan's border crossings with Afghanistan, you know, thereby being the trade route that connects up into Central Asia from that end as well, down to the port. Whichever way you look at it, Balochistan has been the primary area, I think, where the Indians and the US have wanted to, if you like, segregate from Pakistan. I think there has been a definite agenda to try and break up Pakistan, particularly to loosen the Balochistan state away from Pakistan so that those assets and those finances can be brought into the grip of, I guess, the US and perhaps even the Indians.
Right, Abdullah Khan, you know, one of the major things that that the likes of the United States, India, Afghanistan criticized Pakistan on, and this is obviously not unique to Imran Khan, but I wanted to ask you if Imran Khan will be able to tackle this, and that is the issue of terrorism and specifically the financing of terror groups. And we know, Abdullah Khan, that recently the Financial Action Task Force has put Pakistan on the gray list. Do you think that Imran Khan will be able to, I don't know if the word is convince, but I'll use that word, convince the world that Pakistan is not helping finance terror groups?
You know, this is a well-known truth that the FATF was actually used by the Americans to arm twist Pakistan. That was not in, basically an issue because Pakistan remained in the gray list back in 2011-12 as well. Nothing happened, but this time there was much hue and cry about FATF gray list and blacklist. That was actually arm twisting of Pakistan because you were seeing that Americans were threatening Pakistan to act on the issue of Afghanistan. They wanted to press Pakistan to bring Taliban on the negotiation table. So, but if I see the stature of America, Imran Khan, he is a different person. I think that he will not be dictated by the Americans. He will definitely have his own approach towards the issue, and he will perhaps manage things in a different way than the Americans may expect. As far as terror financing is concerned, I think that this is an issue planted by the Indians against Pakistan. There is nothing such like happening inside Pakistan that there is a terror financing going on. There are disputed issues in Pakistan. There are certain parties which have their presence on the Pakistani soil, but these parties have some legal covers by the Pakistani court. So their perception here in Pakistan is quite different from outside world. So if one sees things from Pakistani perspective, he or she may not be agreed with what is happening or what is being thought by the people outside Pakistan. So I don't think that Imran Khan will take any extra pressure on this issue.
I wouldn't already make that statement, Mohsin, because, you know, terrorism has been a long-standing issue which Pakistan has been blamed for a number of times. And, you know, I even standing in Iran right now, Iran obviously has concern about its border safety as well. And we've had in recent months, some incidents about terrorists coming over, trying to come over at the very least, from the Pakistan border into the Islamic Republic. And that has resulted in a number of border guards of Iran being killed. So that's an issue, isn't it?
It certainly is an issue. Look, the thing is, there's a mixed bag in terms of this terror issue. The first thing is, people like the, if you like, the Afghan, so-called Afghan Taliban, they're not in the control of Pakistan. But certainly the Taliban fraternity, who many would say from the Western perspective, certainly the US and these guys, they claim they're terrorists. So to be honest with you, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. One man's jihadi is another man's, if you like, terrorist. The bottom line is that from the realistic point of view, What I found fascinating is that the Pakistan military or whoever the state apparatus is has allowed former terrorists to stand for, as in this election. In fact, in Punjab, 10% to 15% of the public voted for parties which I would regard as extreme right wing, if you like, conservative religious parties. The roots of these sort of individuals are not going to be easy to uproot overnight. Nawaz Sharif, along with, of course, the army to some extent, along with the original General Zia, if you like, opening of this front within Pakistan of people with these very, very right-wing opinions, it is a problem. There is now a legitimate problem there, which I think Imran Khan will have to deal with. However, he's dealt with it up in his own province where he's been the ruler. I mean, he seems to have done a reasonably decent job in managing affairs there. But there are these elements, rogue elements, which could be manipulated by outside forces. And I think inevitably they will be. There will be finance going into these kind of rogue outfits. And that that's another major area that I guess the security apparatus is going to have to really upgrade its efforts. But we cannot deny that there are people who are easily bought and have nefarious sort of, if you like, intentions. But I think a lot of that terrorism is going to be directed at Pakistan itself. So far from Pakistan being a terrorist state or exporting terrorism, I think it's actually going to be the target of such terrorism.
Okay, so, you know, Abdullah Khan, whenever we talk about terrorism, many of us outside of Pakistan would talk about then Saudi influence in Pakistan. And, you know, for many years that's been spoken about, that the Saudis have been able to buy a lot of influence in the country, have been able to possibly even brainwash a lot of people into their ideology, you know, the spreading of Takfiriism, for example, within Pakistani borders, et cetera, et cetera. Imran Khan praised Saudi Arabia, though, in his speech, saying that, you know, Saudi Arabia has stood by Pakistan. What do you make of that?
Actually, the issue of sectarian terrorism in Pakistan or sectarian tension in Pakistan is nothing indigenous in Pakistan, because we used to be living side by side, Shia and Sunnis in Pakistan, but unfortunately the tension between Iran and Saudi Arabia brought in this issue in Pakistan. It is not our issue, and what is happening inside is actually the proxies of the two countries here happening inside Pakistan. What Imran Khan has, he today met with the Saudi ambassador he also praised the Iranians, Iran during his speech. So I think he will be pursuing a balanced policy towards both the countries, the Iran and the Saudi Arabia. And that is the way to go, because we, the Pakistan, used to have good relations with Saudi Arabia as well as with Iran. So we here have no issue with both the countries and what they pursue. They have their own ideology, with the Shias of Iran, or the Wahhabis in Saudi Arabia. They are free to practice or do whatever they want to. But here in Pakistan, we are a diverse society, and we love our diversity. And I think sectarian nature of things will not affect our policies towards both the countries.
I wonder what to make of that, Sayyid Mohsin, because, you know, Saudi influence, it can be argued, has been overwhelming in these years. It's hard to ignore that or to just say that Khan will be able to just walk away from it, will he?
Well, I think that my dear colleague is being very diplomatic in his output, and obviously Imran Khan is also trying to be diplomatic, but I think it's as clear as day that it's the Saudi Arabians who, since the 70s, have had an active, proactive policy of pouring money in and being involved in financing the madrasas which had popped up all across Pakistan. The reality is that those madrasas, their money trail leads back to Saudi Arabia. Behind that, if you like, trail exists the Washington link and the Western link, as well as, I would argue, the Zionist link. So to put Iran and Saudi Arabia on the same footing in terms of their intervention with their indigenous communities, I think Pakistan is at least 25, if not 30% Shia, around that majority. If that Shia population were truly financed and pumped and with cash on the scale that the Saudi Arabians were allowed to do in Pakistan, then I'm afraid you'd have Pakistan in a civil war situation a long ago. The reality is that Iran hasn't done that. It hasn't injected funding to upset the internal security of Pakistan on that level. The Saudis have been, people have been turning a blind eye to the Saudi funding for a very, very long time. You see, Wahhabism, the Saudi version of so-called Islam, wasn't even in existence on the soil of Pakistan at its inception. There were standard mainstream Sunnis who were moderate, Sufi, mystical type of people, mm-hmm. Who went to shrines, who loved the Ahlul Bayt. Such things were all common. And the Shias were pretty much in the same sort of camp. Where did this split come from? It was an ideology which was deliberately rolled out at the behest right. of Saudi Arabia and its partners, and Pakistan was sectarianized by Saudi funding, and I think that this is the one area that the Pakistan military has to take a big action on, and Imran Khan, of course, has to take a big action on. They've got to stop mm-hmm. this external importing of takfirism and the violence that it brings. You've got to actually control that, otherwise it will become your own death knell.
Okay, we're going to leave that as our final word, gentlemen. I do apologize. Time has gotten the best of us, but of course we do appreciate both your contributions to tonight's discussion. That was TV journalist Sayyid Mohsin Abbas, who is speaking to us live from London. And we were also joined by the managing director of the Pakistan Institute for Conflict and Security Studies, Abdullah Khan, who is speaking to us live from Islamabad. And of course, viewers, as always, we appreciate you joining us. Until next time, good night.